Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Your future is important. Take time to plan for what can go right. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, pressure is building on our temporary protection system. More than 40 Ukrainians had to sleep in Dublin Airport at the weekend because the City West hub in Dublin was full. The government is now estimating a shortfall of 15,000 places by the end of the year, and the government is now considering options like disused army barracks to provide emergency accommodation to house Ukrainian refugees. The Irish Human Rights and Equality Commission has been keeping a keen eye on developments, and their Chief Commissioner, Sinéad Gibney, joins us now in studio. And you're very welcome, Sinéad, to the programme this evening. As I say, the government is now estimating a shortfall of up to 15,000 places by the end of the year. They say all accommodation options are now being considered, including equestrian centres, army barracks, office buildings. What's your reaction to all of this?
Well, I think it's all of these options have to be considered, obviously. I mean, our stance on this, our position is that Ireland was failing to meet its obligations under international protection law before the crisis happened. Obviously, the crisis has placed a huge burden on an already creaking system, but it does not mean that Ireland doesn't still have those legal obligations, and those are law. So although we have to be very positive and warmly thank and congratulate those who have responded well to the influx of and the intake of Ukrainian refugees, but we also have to realise that this is a legal obligation that Ireland has enshrined in our own domestic law, and so it's not a choice. We have to simply meet those obligations and meet those standards that we have agreed to. So I think it is important that we look at all of those options that are being put on the table at the moment by the government, but we are obliged to welcome the refugees as long as they keep coming.
So all this talk then about putting a cap on refugees, that's not even an option?
No. It's not a legal obligation for the government. And I think it's problematic kind of putting it out as if it's a decision not to, because that is the legal obligation. Once again, I do think it's important to acknowledge the good work that has been done. But I think it's important that we as a society realise and are aware of our legal obligations as a state, that that is simply what we must do.
So what are our legal obligations then? What must we provide for refugees who are coming here? And this is specific to Ukrainian refugees that we're talking now, because they're the ones who come under this temporary protection system.
Yeah, I mean, I can answer on both levels, really, I suppose, because for people coming in and under international protection or under the temporary protection directive, we are obliged to process their application without delay. And we are also obliged to provide for them a material reception, which includes accommodation, food and clothing. But I would also say that beyond that, what we would be keen to point out as the Human Rights and Equality Commission is that there's plenty of other rights that cannot be realised unless those basic ones are met. And these are, just a reminder, the basic standards that we have signed up to. So there's nothing stopping us as a state going above and beyond that. But for example, it's very hard to consider a picture in which true integration can happen. If you don't have a home, you can't usually find secure schooling, good employment, all of those other things that we just have to do to participate effectively in society. They are barriers. There are barriers to them if we don't have those basic accommodation and basic reception conditions.
OK, so that's interesting on what you're saying there in relation to accommodation, food and clothing, because there doesn't seem to have been any government decision yet in relation to medical cards or food in hotels. But there has been lots of reports that, I'll start with the food and hotels aspect of it, that when the contracts for hotels which are housing refugees at the moment are renewed, that there won't be those contracts won't include free food for Ukrainian refugees staying in hotels. Does that mean that we won't be fulfilling that obligation to provide food then in those instances?
Yeah, I believe so. And I think that's something that has to be looked at before any such suggestion could be made. I also would question the logic of asking people who are refugees to pay for their own food. I think when I interact with people who are either in the international protection system or who are here under refugee status, they're incredibly grateful to the state for the opportunities that they have. So I would imagine that people will be willing to pay when they can. But the reality is that, first of all, there are barriers to employment, now less so for people under the temporary protection directive, but nonetheless there are. And those that do find employment are often in precarious labour, casual labour, low-pay labour. So the idea that they could pay for their own food, I think, is problematic, because then you're going to have to start some kind of means test to determine who can and can't pay. You're creating an administrative system which is in itself costly. So I would question the logic of expecting that refugees are going to be able to pay for their own food.
What then about the medical cards? When refugees, Ukrainian refugees, started arriving here, we were told they would get automatic entitlement to medical cards, a streamlined system to get them those medical cards as quickly as possible. And now, again, reports, nothing yet confirmed by government, that that access may be restricted or indeed means tested. We don't, I think, have an obligation to provide medical cards, do we?
I would have to check that the technical, whether or not it's medical cards. What we do have to provide is vulnerability assessments. So we have to understand who has needs beyond those very basic provision of accommodation and food and clothing, for example. And many people who are coming in through either of these systems are coming in with trauma. And that's what we would have always espoused, and particularly in our submission to the white paper, is that we must have a trauma-informed approach to people who are fleeing war, fleeing persecution. They do have needs, and some of those will be medical needs, some of them will be mental health needs and other support services. We also need to look for example, when we need gender-specific accommodation to be provided for people who are perhaps fleeing war, who whereby rape has been used as a crime within that war. Those women need to be catered to in a very specific way. So absolutely those obligations exist, and then they can't, they are legal obligations that we must meet as a state.
What then about the obligation to provide suitable accommodation, I think is how it might be phrased in the Temporary Protection Directive. Many refugees at the moment staying in tents, I think it's around 300 staying in tents, no sign that they're going to be out of tents for the winter. Mm-hmm. Does that fit under the suitable accommodation, do you think, or is that an objective or subjective thing rather?
Well, I do believe that the numbers are, of course, unprecedented at the moment. And also within the legislation, there is room to say that when there isn't accommodation freely available the moment somebody arrives, that they can, of course, be accommodated in more temporary accommodation. And that's what we're seeing. And that's absolutely appropriate. They must be moved out again under the legislation as soon as is possible. And I think that's really where, what we need to think about, is that it's not just about when people arrive, but it's about their future into, you know, their future time here. Because the reality is it's not going to change anytime soon. I think that's another realization that we need to get across to people, is that obviously the numbers this year are unprecedented. But we talk about the numbers like 50,000 people arriving from Ukraine. There are now 100 million people displaced on this globe, where people can no longer call their own country of origin home. Now, they might be internally displaced, but the numbers are just huge. They are going to be increasing with climate crisis. So what we would love to see, what I would love to call for, is a system within our state infrastructure that is a permanent, solid system, like our health system, like our education system, that is an international protection system that deals with the fact that we are in a world of instability, where we are going to see large movements of people all across the globe and people who need our help and who need our protection here. Mm. And the issue is that what we have now is a crisis response, and it has been in crisis response mode for 20 years since it was established as direct provision. So there's no long-term thinking, there's not even medium-term thinking. And until we get out of that mindset, until we start to see the reality of the world we live in, and I would argue also see the benefit and the positives in being a progressive society that reaches beyond what our international obligations are, and instead see the value in welcoming into our population refugees and people seeking protection.
And because if you're talking about long-term or medium-term, or as you say, we're in the emergency crisis reaction at the moment, Minister Roderick O'Gorman, speaking to me on Primetime last night, said the medium-term plan for Ukrainian refugees, the majority of Ukrainian refugees, is to have them living in hotels. Is that an acceptable medium-term plan under our obligations? Or maybe we don't have obligations under a medium-term plan?
Well, again, it goes back to that within the legislation, there is a section which refers to temporary measures. And that's what I would describe those as. They are not suitable places for people to integrate into society. People need certainty around where they're going to school, where they're going to, you know, if they're going to be able to work. So no, they're not suitable.
Okay, so we're having this conversation in terms of what we should be doing, what we'd like to be doing, and what we should be doing. And we haven't mentioned, I suppose, the context, which is very important. Or I think you have mentioned the context, I haven't, which is the housing crisis here, the pressures the state is under, the homelessness crisis, figures going up again. I think they're due out again at the end of this week and expected to be up again at perhaps a new record level. And they're very real challenges the state faces in housing its own people. Where does that come into all of this, or to what extent should that or can that be taken into account?
Well, it can be taken into account, but just because the government is failing on a policy area elsewhere doesn't let it off the hook for its international protection obligations. That's the way I would see it, is that if housing is a crisis, if people in our country are not getting the solutions they need from government, that is one issue. But that doesn't mean that we can then say, well, that means we can't bring anybody in. So I appreciate the context that we're living in. I appreciate that this is a complex area, and we're not the only country. I mean, if we go back to the numbers, I think it's nearly 8 million or, sorry, yeah, nearly 8 million. And we've taken in 57,000 of that across Europe. So less than 1%. Mm. So as a country, we're not the only country with a housing crisis. And we're not the only country taking in refugees. So I think we have to be realistic about this is just the reality of where we are now. And I do think there are fixes. I think there are ways, and we're hearing a lot of discussion about them over the course of this week in this programme and elsewhere. But we saw during the pandemic what can happen when real meaningful action can be taken to eradicate homelessness during that time. And I think the same level of measures need to be looked at to really address this issue.
Government would argue it is pulling out all the stops. I know Kevin McCarthy, he's the Department of Integration Secretary General. He's appearing for the Dáil's Public Accounts Committee tomorrow. The Irish Times is reporting that he's expected to say the refugee crisis is putting extreme pressure on resources. It's posing very major challenges. It's involved a significant diversion and allocation of staffing resources within his department. And we know the Department of Housing is under serious pressure as well. So, you know, I don't know what exactly what they would say, but I suggest it would be along the lines of this is our pandemic level response. You know, we are doing everything we can.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think the department has to be lauded for a really committed response. And I think that department is, I would say, has been overly burdened, if you like. I mean, in terms of
Roderick O'Gorman's department.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think, I mean, and civil society have had a really strong and coordinated response, and they have called for more centralised leadership within government. I believe we should be seeing that. I believe we should be seeing and hearing communication from the government on a much more regular basis, again, in the same level that we had during COVID. But we need the government and all of the departments that are involved and should be involved in this response to be coordinating more effectively together, because I do believe that too much has fallen onto that one department. So I think there is more that the government can do. And I believe, I mean, I look forward to seeing what is decided and discussed in Friday's meeting. I believe there's an incorporeal cabinet meeting happening on Friday. So I do think there are ways we can continue to step this up. And I think the government knows that, and I hope to see them coming.
Just finally then, on the wider context again, would you be concerned that what has been a very warm welcome, an open-armed welcome from Irish people to Ukrainian refugees in particular, because that is what has really sparked this particular crisis that we're talking about, that could start to turn? You know, you are hearing in particularly on social media, but you're also hearing it, you know, in around political circles, this murmuring of we've got to look after our own first. And I know you've said you can put one in one box and the other in the other box, but lots of people don't think of it like that.
Yeah, I do think that's a danger and a concern. I think already we have a two-tier system emerged, and I have a real issue with that, and I've spoken about that and the racism that underlies that. But that's why I talk about not just central leadership within government, but also over-communicate to the population, tell the population about what's happening, talk to us as a society and include people and communities, because our statistics show, our polling shows that Irish people do support the intake of refugees. They do support equality for people. And we are, as a population, we have such a wide diaspora. I want to see us on the right side of history. There are responses across Europe which are going to be really problematic. And Ireland has a choice right now to be positive in how we welcome people. And I believe that we will do that.
OK, and we might just shoot down some of those myths, Sinead, before I let you go, because I see a text. We've been getting lots of them. Ireland has taken in more than its fair share of refugees. We cannot house the world. You're saying we've taken in our fair share, not more than our fair share.
No, exactly. Yeah, yeah. We have to continue.
OK. Sinead Gibney, thank you very much for joining us this evening. That's Irish Human Rights and Equality Commissioner, Chief Commissioner Sinead Gibney. You can let us know what you think to 51551.